Blog Talk Radio.
Niggas spitting venom out his body with the dopest flow. And wonder why the lines around the corner, cause the little motherfucker has the dopest show. So one time for my independent women and all the single mothers who be getting that cake. Two times for my dogs pulling triggers and my niggas in the kitchen that be flipping that way. East Coast, West Coast, Midwest, 30 South. Then we took it all around the world. I got fans in retirement homes for teenagers and little bitty boys and girls. Dropping lyrical bombs up in your hood, now I'm stopping, I'ma hit them till the block explodes. Hip hop, R&B, pop star, what you want? I even got a little rock and roll.
The most creative, original, got them taking subliminal. They can't get what I got. They want it so bad. $4 million pad and enough to retire off. Two albums gone. Wave your white flags. I'm hot.
And every time I rhyme, I'm putting rappers in the ground with lines that got them hooked like dope. They gotta make up their mind because they running out of time and now I'm about to make them choke. Better turn your stereo louder. Listen up and let me preach. Let's get arrested for disturbing the peace. Come on.
Man, this is disturbing the peace. She getting on my nerve. Boy, I tell you the truth. You know what I'm saying? While he doing shows, I'm in these streets. You know what I'm saying? While he on TV, I'm in these streets. And then my broad and my kid walk around singing it. Well, if they sing another verse, why I swear, you know what I'm saying? I'm on another level, though. I got a car wash. I got a shop on Old National. I got my own wrestling label. You heard of Posse Family Cartel. You know what I'm saying? We real. Who this nigga think he is?
I'm a household name with games spitting out of my mouth at all times. I spit it out and about and spit it out of the south until they recognize the danger sign. So feel a tingle in your spine by the way I talk. And it's pimping in my blood. You can tell by the way I walk. Ooh, Lord. More styles than a barbershop. Saw the cop. People in the way when a ball of block. Little do they know that I'm calling shots. And I'm not to be fucked with. If you see me come around the corner, then duck. Quick perpetrators construct dead. I try to tell them, but they don't want to listen. I try to shine them, but they don't want to glisten. While the hi-hat keeps on kicking, and the kick drum keep on pumping, I'm dumping on a closely fool. Cause rules were made to be broken, but you can't make broken rules. Hear what I'm saying, or heard what I said. Hear what they playing, cause through this music, I'ma still be heard if I'm dead. Call your producers, cause I'm hurting these beats. I said it once, I'll say it twice. Bitch, disturbing the beat. Come on.
Yeah, the king of the king has spoken. A year started hood to hood, block to block. We got the red eye nut gang. Seven the peace. We don't die. We multiply. We make a damn difference. Thanks for getting the CD started.
people feel is not. And where Democrats are characterized as coastal liberal latte system.
Latte system.
Yeah. Politically correct. Healthcare and family leave was because my own family's history wasn't that different from theirs, even if I looked a little bit different. Same thing in Iowa. And so the question is, how do we rebuild that party as a whole so that there's not a county in any state, I don't care how red, where we don't have a presence and we're not making the argument, because I think we have a better argument. But that requires a lot of work. You know, it's been something that I've been able to do successfully in my own campaigns. It is not something I've been able to transfer to candidates in midterms and to build a sustaining organization around. That's something that I would have liked to have done more of. But it's kind of hard to do when you're also dealing with a whole bunch of issues here in the White House. That doesn't mean, though, that it can't be done. And I think there are going to be a lot of talented folks out there, a lot of progressives who share my values who are going to be leading the charge in the years to come. Michelle Kaczynski, CNN.
Thank you. This week we heard Hillary Clinton talk about how she thinks that the FBI director's most recent announcement made a difference in the outcome of the election. And we also just heard an op-ed for campaign chairman talk about something being deeply broken within the FBI. He talked about thinking that the investigation early on was lackadaisical in his words. So what do you think about those comments? Do you think there's any truth to them? Do you think there's a danger there that they're calling into question the integrity of institutions in a similar way that Donald Trump's team has done? And the second part to that is that Donald Trump's team repeatedly, giving the indication that the investigation of the Russian hack as well as retaliation might not be such a priority once he's in office. So what do you think the risk is there, and are you going to talk to him directly about some of those comments?
Well, on the latter point, as I said before, the transition from election season to governance season is not always smooth. You know, it's bumpy. There's still feelings that are raw out there. There are people who are still thinking about how things unfolded, and I get all that. But when Donald Trump takes the oath of office and is sworn as the 45th president of the United States, then he's got a different set of responsibilities and considerations. I've said this before. I think there is a sobering process when you walk into the Oval Office. I haven't shared previously private conversations I've had with the president-elect. I will say that they have been cordial, and in some cases have involved me making some pretty specific suggestions about how to ensure that regardless of our obvious deep disagreements about policy, maybe I can transmit some thoughts about maintaining the effectiveness, integrity, cohesion of the office, our various democratic institutions, and he has listened. I can't say that he will end up implementing, but the conversations themselves have been cordial as opposed to defensive in any way. And I will always make myself available to him, just as previous presidents have made themselves available to me as issues come up. With respect to the FBI, I will tell you I've had a chance to know a lot of FBI agents. I know Director Comey. They take their job seriously. They work really hard. They help keep us safe and save a lot of lives. And it is always a challenge for law enforcement when there's an intersection between the work that they are doing and the political system. It's one of the difficulties of democracy general. We have a system where we want our law enforcement investigators and our prosecutors to be free from politics, to be independent, to play it straight. But sometimes that involves investigations that touch on politics, and particularly in the hyper-partisan environment that we've been in, everything is suspect. Everything you do one way or the other. One thing that I have done is to be pretty scrupulous about not wading into investigation decisions or prosecution decisions or decisions not to prosecute. I have tried to be really strict in my own behavior about preserving the independence of law enforcement, free from my own judgments and political assessments in some cases. And I don't know why I would stop now. Mike Dornan of Bloomberg.
There you go. Thank you, Mr. President. On the left, peer reviews and what happened, their responsibility, the Russian government, the Iranian government, the Assad regime, pretty well laid. But do you, as President of the United States, leader of the free world, feel any personal moral responsibility now at the end of your presidency for the carnage that we're all watching in the left house, which I'm sure disturbs you, especially disturbs you? Secondly, also on the left house, you've again made clear your practical disagreement with the United States and President-elect Trump throughout his campaign, and he said again last night, and he wants to create safe zones in Syria. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like in this transition you need to help him towards implementing that, or is that not something that you should be doing?
Mike, I always feel responsible. I felt responsible when kids were being shot by snipers. I felt responsible when millions of people had been displaced. I feel responsible for murder and slaughter that's taking place in South Sudan that's not being reported on, partly because there's not as much social media being generated from there. There are places around the world where horrible things are happening, and because of my office, because I'm President of the United States, I feel responsible. I ask myself every single day, is there something I could do that would save lives and make a difference and spare some child who doesn't deserve to suffer? So that's a starting point. There's not a moment during the course of this presidency where I haven't felt some responsibility. That's true, by the way, for our own country. When I came into office and people were losing their jobs and losing their homes and losing their pensions, I felt responsible. And I would go home at night and I would ask myself, was there something better that I could do or smarter that I could be that would make a difference in their lives, that would relieve their suffering and relieve their hardship? So with respect to Syria, what I have consistently done is taken the best course that I can to try to end the civil war, while having also to take into account the long-term national security interests of the United States. And throughout this process, based on hours of meetings. If you tallied it up, days or weeks of meetings, where we went through every option in painful detail with maps, and we had our military, and we had our aid agencies, and we had our diplomatic teams. And sometimes we'd bring in outsiders who were critics of us. Whenever we went through it, the challenge was that short of putting large numbers of U.S. troops on the ground, uninvited, without any international law mandate, without sufficient support from Congress, at a time when we still had troops in Afghanistan and we still had troops in Iraq, and we had just gone through over a decade of war and spent trillions of dollars, and when the opposition on the ground was not cohesive enough to necessarily govern a country, and you had a military superpower in Russia prepared to do whatever it took to keep its clients safe involved, and you had a regional military power in Iran that saw their own vital strategic interests at stake and were willing to send in as many of their people or proxies to support the regime. And in that circumstance, unless we were all in and willing to take over Syria, we were going to have problems. And then everything else was tempting because we wanted to do something and it sounded like the right thing to do, but it was going to be impossible to do this on the cheap. And in that circumstance, I have to make a decision as President of the United States as to what is best. I'm sorry, what's going on? Somebody's not feeling good? All right. We can get our doctors back there to help out. So somebody want to go to my doctor's office and just have them? All right. Where was I? So we couldn't do it on the cheap. Now, it may be. Can somebody help out, please, and get Dr. Jackson in here?
This is Black Noise Radio, and this is live, listening to President Obama give his last press conference. And now we have a medical emergency.
Somebody grabbing our doctor? Of course. In the meantime, just give her a little room. Doctor will be here in a second. You guys know where the doctor's office is? So just go through the palm doors. It's right next to the map room. There he is. All right, there's Dr. Jackson. He's all right. Okay. Doctor's in the house. So, and I don't mean that. I mean that with all sincerity. I understand the impulse to want to do something, but ultimately, what I've had to do is to think about what can we sustain, what is realistic, And my first priority has to be, what's the right thing to do for America? And it has been our view that the best thing to do has been to provide some support to the moderate opposition so that they could sustain themselves and that you wouldn't see anti-Assad regime sentiments just pouring into al-Nusra and al-Qaeda or ISIL. That we engage our international partners in order to put pressure on all the parties involved and to try to resolve this through diplomatic and political means. I cannot claim that we've been successful. And so that's something that, as is true with a lot of issues and problems around the world, I have to go to bed with every night. But I continue to believe that it was the right approach given what realistically we could get done. Absent a decision, as I said, to go in a much more significant way. And that, I think, would not have been sustainable or good for the American people because we had a whole host of other obligations that we also had to meet, wars we had already started and that were not yet finished. With respect to the issue of safe zones, it is a continued problem, a continued challenge with safe zones. Is if you are setting up those zones on Syrian territory, then that requires some force that is willing to maintain that territory in the absence of consent from the Syrian government and now the Russians or the Iranians. So it may be that with Aleppo's tragic situation unfolding, that in the short term, if we can get more of the tens of thousands who are still trapped there out, that so long as the world's eyes are on them and they are feeling pressure, the regime and Russia concludes that they are willing to find some arrangement, perhaps in coordination with Turkey, whereby those people can be safe. Even that will probably be temporary, but at least it solves a short-term issue that's going to arise. Unfortunately, we're not even there yet, because right now we have Russians and Assad claiming that basically all the innocent civilians who were trapped in Aleppo are out, when international organizations, humanitarian organizations who know better and who are on the ground, have said unequivocally that there's still tens of thousands who are trapped and prepared to leave under pretty much any conditions. And so right now our biggest priority is to continue to put pressure wherever we can to try to get them out. Okay.
I
will help President-elect Trump, with any advice, counsel, information that we can provide so that he, once he's sworn in, can make a decision. Between now and then, these are decisions that I have to make based on the consultations I have with our military and the people who've been working this every single day. Peter Alexander.
Mr. President, thank you very much. Can you, given all the intelligence that we have now, assure the public that this was, once and for all, a free and fair election? And specifically on Russia, do you feel the obligation now, as they've been insisting that this isn't the case, to show the proof that they say, put your money where your mouth is, and declassify some of the intelligence, some of the evidence that exists? And more broadly, as it relates to Donald Trump on this very topic, are you concerned about his relationship with Vladimir Putin, especially given some of the recent cabinet picks, including his selection of the Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, who posted Putin with champagne over oil fields.
I may be getting older because these multi-part questions. I started losing track. I can assure the public that there was not.
Work.